I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hi, this is the real Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Imposter!
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and we are going to be talking about Alien Covenant, and we might branch out on a couple other things, but this is just a little quick... Well, we just watched the movie, and we want to talk about it. And with me today, I have, as usual...
Hi, I'm Tech.
And possibly for the first time on the podcast...
This is Dave.
Dave, the Dizzle. And Dave, you're actually getting interested in podcasting, yes?
Yep, I've been dabbling in the last 72 hours at all the information that I can.
It's not so scary, Dave. We'll be gentle on your first time, and you'll see. We're nice.
It just the hand on your knee creeping ever slowly upwards, that's normal.
Very normal.
So Dave is a longtime friend of ours in Meat Space, and so he was visiting us, and we said, hey, have you ever seen Alien Covenant? And he said, no. And we said, good, because we just picked it up, and we hadn't seen it. I wasn't too keen on watching this because I heard all these horrible... reactions and reviews, and then Paul Cooley at paulcooley.com, or is it paulecooley.com, something like that, just search him, you'll find it, and he basically said, well, I loved it because it's exactly what I wanted from an alien movie. So I said, sure, let's check it out. And my initial reactions, I'll say, yeah, it's exactly what I want from an alien movie.
I'm gonna say something completely shocking, is I've given up on critics.
Yeah,
they, whoever these critics are, it's, I don't expect a, you know, I don't know, some type of Oscar level winning performance out of everyone, and not everything has to make me cry and make me feel emotions. Sometimes I just want to go to the theater and I want to be afraid, or I want to laugh myself silly, or I want to just, you know, eat a whole bucket of popcorn, or sometimes I want to go and I want to feel feelings. Sometimes I want all of them together. But I'm really annoyed that they hated Alien Covenant really, really, really badly.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of good.
Yeah.
They hated the new Blade Runner.
Did they hate the new Blade Runner?
Oh, they hated it.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I loved it.
They hated Bright.
Yes, they are so wrong.
Which it was really, really good.
I'm completely wrong about that. I have to agree with Tech because the critics kind of set my mindset for the Alien movie. Again, like we were talking about earlier, I was told with everything I read on the internet, this movie was going to set up the merge between the prequels and the original Alien movies. But as I found out, there is going to be a third movie, so I am completely clueless, courtesy of the critics.
You spent this whole movie waiting for like a scene or something to happen that would link it back to the first one.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. I was sitting there watching it. And now that it's over, there was no connection. So I have to go watch it again because I was under the pretense that something was going to happen to tie everything together.
So if you guys haven't seen Alien Covenant, it is the sequel to Prometheus.
Yes.
And it is part two of a trilogy of movies that has... it's Ridley Scott's return to the Alien franchise. And it's the story that is supposed to set up the original trilogy. We're supposed to understand why the xenomorphs are what they are, where they come from, and how they got to the planets where they were then found in the first three movies. But it's a very different type of story. It's told very differently. And people that are expecting the James Cameron aliens with the colonial marines and the running and the gunning aren't going to get it. And it's Ridley Scott. It's slow. It's scary.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
It's poetic.
Right. You know, like one of the characters in this movie spends the entire time quoting Lord Byron.
Yeah. Or misattributing.
Right. Or misattributing to Byron. And so, listening to Wagner.
So we do want to say that we've been pretty light on the spoilers so far, but we will likely get into spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled and you actually want to watch this movie, go watch this movie and come back and then listen to this. But I think that I don't think that there's really anything I could say that would spoil it, because I don't think this is the kind of movie that gets spoiled. There's no like catch aha ending.
No, it's a giant space alien that goes around and kills everyone.
Yeah.
And guess what? Everybody dies.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to say that I think that, unfortunately, people are... Their expectations are they want to see... They want to see and feel the way that they did after they saw the first Alien movie. And that's not going to happen. Even Alien... That movie, had you never seen it and you watched it today, it would not have the same impact on you as when we saw Alien for the first time, because it's influenced so many other things. And there have been so many other movies around us. You know, it's people are hating on The Last Jedi. You know what? They also hated on Empire.
Like it was a gag on Spaceballs.
Yeah.
They did an alien gag on space.
They did. Hello, my baby. Hello,
hello,
my daddy. Honey. Yeah.
Hello, my right.
But it's like you, if you walked into The Last Jedi and you thought, I'm going to feel the way I did when I saw Star Wars for the first time, A New Hope, you're not going to feel that way. There's nothing that would make you feel that way, because even Star Wars wouldn't do that to you today.
No. And, you know, we are not the same people we were when we were kids. And, you know, nostalgia glasses firmly in place. You go into the theater expecting to, you know, maybe we're just bad heroin junkies. You know,
yeah.
We're trying to feel that first rush from the first time. And you're never going to feel it again. I walked into this movie with no expectations. And I think that maybe this is what we need to tell critics and what we need to give as advice to people is just go to the movies to have fun. Yeah. And don't – it's a movie. It's entertainment. It's popcorn. It has to be nothing more than that. And when you expect a movie to be anything more than entertainment is, I think, when we get disappointed, that we think that this movie will redefine a genre or that these characters are going to change how we think about things. And if that happens, that's a wonderful consequence. But we shouldn't go into we shouldn't go into a movie expecting that, because that's how you get disappointed.
Exactly. And limit your exposure to trailers. I went into The Last Jedi without ever seeing a trailer. I'm good with that. But my rule is, for SF or, you know, spec fic or any of the comic book movies, any of the big movies I want to see, I limit myself to one trailer. And once I've seen one, I can't watch another, because you end up getting oversaturated and it kills the experience.
Well, yeah, and touching on that oversaturation thing and going back to what you were saying on how the movies coming out now are not going to have the same experience, we have to remember when the first Star Wars came out and the first Alien came out, those were somewhat revolutionized how movies were, especially like, we'll go back to Star Wars. Nothing was done like that before.
It changed everything.
Well, yeah, it changed everything, and it started pushing things forward. So to have that, and the way that we are with technology and everything like that, again, being oversaturated, no one's going to get that feeling again. I want that feeling. Again, with The Last Jedi, I saw the first teaser, and then I stopped.
Yeah,
I almost ran out of the theater watching another movie because they had the new trailer before, and I kind of closed my eyes, covered my ears, and just said la 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 a bunch of times. So yeah, but overall, Alien Covenant was a wicked movie.
Yeah,
a lot of people died, giant alien. Yeah, that's all you need.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. The ship, the Covenant itself, is designed very differently, and it's very long, and it's a flexible sort of an arc ship. And when it gets hit in space or in the atmosphere, you see it rock.
Yeah, it was cool.
They actually play a little bit with the idea that there's no sound in space, and there's a scene where they evacuate the air out of an airlock, and you hear the siren go silent because suddenly there's no more noise, and the only noise you hear are the vibrations of the chains and the decking and the machinery moving. And it was done very, very well. The gunplay was really good. It's just that this movie takes place in 2093. And they're walking around with Beretta M9s and ARs. So you're telling me that they're using about 150-year-old guns?
Well, they're new innards. It's just, it's all retro casings.
No.
Because everyone's like, you know what? There's nothing wrong with the Beretta.
Yeah, but there really isn't. And
you know what? They're probably at home still have 1911, so.
Right, but they're timeless platforms. You're absolutely correct, and they are reliable, and maybe that's what they wanted to go with on this arc ship. But even, you know, a fancy cladding I will give them a thumbs up for going to green lasers, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was only one reason you would ever use a green over a red laser, is that green laser, the spectrum of light shows up better during the day, and it's easier to see than at night. And for you're only going to have one laser on your gun, and you don't know what there's going to be on another planet, you might as well carry green. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. You know, for me, my only real big problems are they make some pretty stupid choices, and they're just so nitpicky. Though they're on a
planet. They took no time to study the planet before they get there. One person gets sick, and she's calling back to the ship saying, "This person is sick. We need to get him to the medical bay." And the captain or the guy on the ship asks, "Is this a quarantine situation?" And the person says, "I don't know." The correct answer is yes.
Yeah. If you don't know, then the answer is yes.
It's yes.
The entire time, there's at one point where the captain, and by the way, that changes three times. The captain says, "We can't bring these things back on the ship." And everybody said, "Yeah," but then they forgot that. When there were only two survivors, that's when you say, "Nope, don't come down and get us. Just leave. It's too much of a risk." Because there's 2,000 people on that ship still in stasis, and there's a whole other generation. So, no, just stop trying to save your life. You're done. You're dead. Go. Wake somebody up who can take over your job and move on. You can't do this. There's a plasma storm. Okay, so let's just fly right through it, not let's wait till it's over.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Or go somewhere where the storm isn't.
Yeah, the storms didn't make sense. Again, the one thing I can probably think of and the why they used the old guns, because they spent so much money on the synthetics, upgrading them. Because the one thing that was cool, the actor that played both the synthetics in the movie are the same person. Spoilers.
Michael Fassbender. Magneto.
One thing that was cool with his characters is that, and Nutty pointed out, is that the older character and the newer character had slightly different accents.
Yep.
Showing that things got evolved. And then there's also it kind of helps with the plot. The engineering that changed, and they show that like things have evolved, things have changed.
He's a different model.
Yeah, he's a different model, and but he's more robotic than the one that was in Prometheus.
Yeah, they cut off the emotions. I love the interplay between Fassbender and Fassbender.
Oh, wonderfully done, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and at one point I'm like, he's gonna so want to make out with him, and then boom. He totes does.
If there's one thing I would change in the movie, it's what Ridley Scott taught me about horror.
We see the monster too much?
We see the monster too much. And the monster on the screen is nowhere near as scary as the monster in your head.
Yeah.
So in the original Alien, he showed the xenomorph very, very, very sparingly. And there were technical reasons for that. The suit was expensive. It was hard to work with. The special effects of the 1979 are not what they are today. So it was very hard to do convincingly. So they just didn't do it at all. Yeah. And they just let you imagine the monster scurrying through the ship. And they would only show you like tight close-up shots just before it killed somebody or it was here and then it was there. And it was done amazingly well. This one here, I see too many xenomorphs moving around, and I get it with the modern technology. You can have those scenes. I'd rather not in this franchise.
Yeah, that is. I will also say that's a stylistic nitpick. But I wonder how much you can get away with going that dark with Blu-ray, because if people can't see what's on the screen, because by the way, I mean watching this on Blu-ray. And I'm sure watching it in the theaters, I mean, this thing is crisp. This is clear. If we had seen this in the 80s, we would have been blown away. We would not have believed what we were seeing, because there is a big difference in screen clarity. So if they tried to hide the monster as much as they did in 79, I'm not sure that that would fly with the amount that we can actually see on Blu-ray.
No, but there's ways to make it move and scurry, yeah, that it stays out of the light and it's in the shadows. And, oh my God, where is it? And I mean, they did it well in the first trilogy. They can do it again. I think the one thing I'd change. The one thing I found that was missing is the art of H.R. Giger, because he's passed away.
Yes.
H.R. Giger is the designer of the Xenomorph and a wonderfully crazy dark Dutch painter.
Creepy.
Creepy painter. And he does.
And sculptor.
Right. Exactly. And metal worker. But he did the character design of the Xenomorph. Yeah. And there's a scene in Prometheus where they're in an underground cave that turns out to be a cathedral. And when they look up at the ceiling and there's these frescoes.
Yeah.
Of the Xenomorphs, and those are original paintings by Giger that they put up on the ceiling. And there's a lot of art in this movie. When they get to the architect's city,
yeah,
there's those huge statues, yep, like Rushmore style, carved into the mountains, and there's all the couple
Easter Island heads, yeah,
right,
yeah,
and the crazy cool architecture and all kinds of stuff. Had that all been done by Giger,
yeah, well,
it would have been better.
I do want to say that the people that they hired did a pretty decent job, because you also had the whole like all of the bodies in the center of the city just burned and decrepit and all this other stuff. That was beautiful. That was absolutely beautiful.
Horrifying.
Yeah. The egg pods did remind me of Audrey too, but it was just, there was a little something that you could tell this wasn't Giger.
Well, yeah. And to touch on the how much they show the Xenomorphs in this one, I think because within the movie there's two different versions of the Xenomorph. And I think by showing them more, it kind of shows how the Xenomorph splices into its host DNA.
So what are the two versions?
Well, there's the traditional one that gets spliced with the humans. And then the one that you see first is from a alien race that was actually on the planet that is on now. Because we find out through the movie that this planet that they're on was not the original planet that Prometheus took place on. So it shows how it spliced with these aliens. They're big, tall, whitish, grayish people.
They kind of look like albinos.
Yeah, they kind of look like albinos.
They're the architects.
Are they the, well,
yes.
Are they the architects?
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm looking at it, they definitely, they saw the architect ship come back, and I thought that it was the big giant people coming back to them, because they seemed like they were worshiping.
Oh, yeah, like in the scene where the ship shows up.
Yeah.
It was definitely kind of like a celebration almost. Everyone's showing up in town square. Everyone's cheering. And then once they see what's actually going on in the ship, that's when the chaos shows up. And then you have the town hall or the city square of crispy critters that we see.
Yeah. So I have a question for you guys. One, what happened? What did David do to Dr. Elizabeth Shaw?
He dissected her after impregnating her with one of the Xenomorphs. You might have missed the scene, but when he's in his laboratory, one of the dissected heads.
It's her head. Diagrams. Okay.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure if that was an actual dissection or if that was a recreation.
Right, it might have been,
yeah,
but it's the inference there,
yeah,
is that he dissected her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought.
She didn't die in the crash.
No, we know that.
Yeah.
So the next question is, did Walter make the choice to let David return to the ship, or did David best Walter?
I think David bested Walter, because within the movie, there is a scene where Walter, the new synthetic, gets like stabbed from one side of the neck to the other, and immediately the skin heals, but he falls over, and it cuts to a different scene. Then you see at the end of the movie where the synthetic, or Dave Walter, as we could call him, is standing there, and he's stapling a giant wound on his face back together. So once I saw that, I'm like, yeah, that's David. Yeah. Walter's done. He's back on whatever room he left them in.
The scene where I'm going to just call him DeWalt.
DeWalt.
like a screwdriver, right? So when DeWalt is fighting and Walter has a rock in his hand and he's smashing him in the face and you see David reach for the knife.
Yeah.
And then in the next scene, you see one person walk away with the cuts on his face from the stone. It's you know who that is. You know that that's David.
But
I don't think that David's speech had an impact on Walter.
Okay.
I don't think Walter let him win.
Right.
I think that he for two things. One, David is deceitful.
Mm-hmm.
And use that as a moment to hide his attack with the knife. And the other is that I don't think Walter has the intellectual capacity to capitulate like that. He's they've proven that emotionally and intellectually he's different. He's not he's been, to use a bad term, dumbed down.
Yeah, yeah.
But to make him more
robotic.
More robotic, more
non-human,
supple,
tame.
Yeah, tame. So I don't think he so when he got the bone flute through the neck and he dropped, I think he played dead because it's I can't beat him in an attack, but if I just stop moving for a while, he'll move away and then I can go and do something else. So I think he played dead in that attack. To sneak up on David.
My thought was he went into reboot mode where so his cognitive functions shut down and the backup systems just repaired him.
Yeah, but then I'd need like a Wall-E style apple blong. Tell you, blong.
Well, his he was in another room.
His eyes do the beach balls.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that there's they definitely planted seeds to make us wonder because so he's not, he doesn't have the emotional capacity they keep telling us, Walter. And yet he cares for Daniels. Like he really does care for Daniels. It's more than just duty. And they said that they are not able to create. They prevented them from creating. And yet he does.
Well, yeah. And at the same time where you have that, like, again, he cares for the main character. The big thing with that is that any time that he's questioned about it from, like, the crew, he said that he's always made to serve.
Right? Yeah.
He's just doing what he's serving their master in any way, shape, or form. But if you look at it from David's point of view, that those type of actions, no, that's emotion. That's raw emotion.
Yeah.
That's just how you should be functioning as a sentient being. The one thing with Walter you see through the movie is that he's very mundane with his speech. His there's no emotion whatsoever. But with David's synthetic, like he smiles, he shows deceit all the time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, my one thing is that's another seed. Is how many times he says it's duty, it's how I'm programmed, I'm made to serve. Me thinks he doth protest too much. But I would like to think that David just bested him because I would like to think that while he does have all of these seeds, he cares more for Daniels than he does for the idea of freedom for synthetics or whatever, the whole idea, breaking from servitude. But I do think that there's a really interesting thing, and we see it in Aliens, and we see it in Prometheus, and we see it, you know, and when I say Aliens, I mean Aliens, and then all the other movies. And we see it in Blade Runner, is that synthetics and replicants, there is something in them that no matter how they program them, that they want to be individuals. They want to, they have this desire to, or there's something in them to be more. And I think that that's like the core of the Ridley Scott SF world.
Well, yeah, you definitely see that with the new Blade Runner, the scene at the start on the farm with Dave Bautista.
Yes. Oh, he's so good in that.
So good.
So, by the way, there's going to be slight spoilers for Blade Runner as well.
It needs to be mentioned out there if people aren't aware of this, but Ridley Scott was asked, and he has confirmed that Blade Runner and Aliens are the same universe.
Yes, it is known.
It is the same. So the synthetics are the replicants.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same world, and it's been known for years.
I just found out now.
and Dave was over there like, wow, I can't believe this. But he was off the mic, so you didn't hear him.
yeah, also tonight I found out how there's going to be another movie after Alien Covenant, because I don't know what the internet is.
Yeah.
So I will ask the two of you, and then I will answer. What do you guys want in the end of this trilogy? What do you want in the third movie?
I'm going to say that I want Ridley Scott to be directing it, because that means it's not going to be a rehash. So I was listening to an interview with Ridley Scott recently, and it was on Q, and the interviewer asked, he said, why didn't you direct the new Blade Runner? And he says, because I've already done it. He says, it's the same reason I didn't direct Aliens. It's the same. I don't want to do sequels. I don't want to do the same thing over again. I don't want to rehash anything. And so the fact that he directed Prometheus and the fact that he directed Alien Covenant, if he directs the next movie, then it is going to be what I need it to be. And I don't know what I want, because I don't want to build up expectations. I want to see this art piece that he wants to show me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. To add on that, the one thing that would be really cool to help tie everything together is that, like we discussed earlier, is that the pacing for the movies of the new ones compared to the old ones is completely different. What I think would be really cool is that if they have the tempo of the new ones and it molds into that classic, creepy, you're going to get murdered from the shadows vibe. And then so it just flows right into the next one.
Yeah.
If these movies are to tie in to the old ones, that means that this new movie will have to end the way the first one started.
Mm-hmm.
So on a deserted moon, they find a crashed alien spaceship filled with eggs. So we know that David has genetically engineered the eggs. This is what he used to kill the captain. There's a couple of them. We need thousands of them.
Yeah.
We also need that ship to be piloted by a 15-foot-tall architect, because he's seen in the movie on his like big throne with the telescope on it. It's a sculpture. It's called the Space Cowboy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need the Space Cowboy to pilot an architect ship full of eggs and crash it on a moon.
Mm.
How we're going to get there from an ark ship with 2,000 colonists with David on board and alien zygotes that he had kept, when they reach their destination 7 years from now, how is this going to unfold? And the only thing, so that's what needs to happen. The only thing I really, really want is, as cool as Ridley Scott is, the second movie, Aliens, done by James Cameron, has a special place in my heart.
Oh, yeah.
So of those 2,000 colonists, can we have a couple colonial Marines aboard? Can we bring back the Marines?
We'll see.
With, like, Vasquez and Hicks and Hudson.
Oh, my God. Vasquez is, like...
She's amazing, isn't she?
She's so hot. She's one of the greatest characters.
And this may be a story that maybe Dave doesn't know, that I'll tell the story to our wireless listeners as well, because I love this story. It's that when the actress showed up to play the role of Vasquez, she's in the room waiting to audition. Everybody else that's there is in like buzz cuts and combat fatigues, and she is in a full dress with makeup and her hair did and her nails did, and she's looking fine. Because she misunderstood what the movie was about. She's Mexican. When she heard Aliens, she thought it was about people immigrating to the United States.
Oh, God.
So she goes, hold on a minute, cuts her hair, goes back, and gets the part. So when there's a line when they're getting out of stasis in Aliens, and they're like, yeah, Vasquez misunderstood. When she heard Aliens, she thought they meant border jumpers. And everybody laughs at her.
that's what they were referencing, is the fact that the actress made that mistake and got the part. And then, hey, Vasquez, have you ever been mistaken for a man? No? Have you? So if I can get the Colonial Marines again, because as a soldier myself, this is one of the Aliens is one of those movies that, you know, you watch till the tape wears out. You have to watch this thing. It's just it's a foundation document. I want to see Colonial Marines. I want to see run and gun fights with the aliens, which we got in this movie, and they weren't bad.
Yeah,
that was really good. But it has to end on a deserted moon with a crashed ship, the space cowboy, and a belly full of aliens.
So a couple of aliens tropes that I have noticed. Slipping in blood. Like, seriously, people, we need some textured surfaces here and some grippies on your shoes. Slipping in blood is a horrible excuse, and it happens a lot. If you try to clean yourself in any alien-related movie, you're going to die.
You're dead.
Don't take a shower. Don't have sex in the shower. Don't even clean yourself in a little stream. Just stay dirty.
Yeah, just stay dirty. Don't try to have any relationship, because anyone that was in a relationship in this movie.
Well, considering they were all in a relationship.
They were all in a relationship, which really hammered home that if you have a loved one on a spaceship going to a random planet galaxies away, they're probably going to get killed by an alien.
The other thing is, it doesn't matter if you survive, you're still dead. Because in the previous Aliens movies, there'd be the sole survivor or the few survivors. And then in the opening scenes or the very beginning of the next movie, you find out, oh yeah, all those people are dead. Except Ripley. She got to live three times. But
did she though?
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing. Everybody that survives ends up dead in the next movie. And in Prometheus, okay, Dr. Shaw, she survives. And what do we find out? Oh, yeah, she died too. And in this movie, they don't wait for the next movie. It's no, they're dead.
Well, yeah, and that's going to be crazy for the third one, because, again, there's like 2,000 plus people. And if they are going to follow that.
And a whole other generation.
Yeah, and a whole other generation that are incubating in service trays, I guess, if you want to call them anything. But
egg trays.
Yeah, they're eggs, yeah. Mm. But if they end up killing all these people off in the next movie, I hope that they don't just say, oh, yeah, we landed, and we blew an air hose on entry to the planet. Everyone died except these one person. And
now watch them run for the next rest of the movie. Yeah, yeah. And I think that might be why the critics hated it, is because nobody survived. That
could be. If you expect a fireworks show, American flags to fly in the background, and everybody to sort of, you know, like ride off into the sunset to the Star-Spangled Banner, yeah.
And Will Smith saying, welcome to Earth.
Yeah, welcome to Earth. Yeah, no, this is not going to happen. This movie will not end with you feeling good.
Yeah.
And that's okay in a movie. And that's, Star Wars taught us, that's especially okay in the middle part of a trilogy.
Yes.
This is the bridge. It's supposed to be a downer because we're waiting for the conclusion.
And, you know, honestly, if in the next movie, humanity loses, I'm okay with that too.
Well, they almost have to if you look at the first Alien movie.
Exactly.
Because there's humans going to check up on a ship, and guess what? Everyone dies then too.
Yeah.
So
we know what the cycle is. So Alien and Blade Runner are in the same universe. Which one's first?
Blade Runner's first by timeline, because Blade Runner 2049.
Right.
This movie took place in 2093.
Yeah.
And I'm wrong, but I think the first Alien was in the 2170s.
Okay. Because I'm thinking that in Blade Runner, they also have like giant statues, and that's just a coincidence then. That's not an actual tie. That's probably just a Ridley Scott stylistic choice.
But at the same time, anyone can build a statue.
This is true.
And in Blade Runner 2049, most of the statues were in the hazardous go-away zone. So they've, in that world, they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing this out here. Blade Runner versus Aliens versus Predator. It's all the same world.
Oh, I'd love to see Decker try to go up against a Predator in one of those big Blade Runner cities with the flying cars. We have a Predator and aliens. Yeah.
I'm picturing like a really cheesy like Harrison Ford pulling the Air Force One. Yes, he grabs the alien. Get off my spaceship! I'm a grumpy old man.
Old man yells at clouds.
Yeah, exactly.
I have an amazing amount of love for this franchise. I don't have that much love for the AVP franchise. Predator has always been more hokey.
Can you make the noise?
Oh, no.
It's really creepy, by the way, when you're lying in bed and it's all dark and everything's sweet. And then that happens and you're like, oh, my God, stop it. So, yeah, this is what he does to me.
I like Predator. I really do. I don't think the AVP movies are the best pieces of cinema out there.
It's action movies. It's better than Commando.
Right. Oh, please. Anything's better than Commando.
This is the scale, you know. Right.
I like the AVP movies. They're not the greatest. No. This
is art.
I am going to. Should we get the ratings?
Yeah, let's rate it.
I will give out of what, 5 or 10? I always get it
10.
Wrong. Out of 10, I will give this movie 8.5 misguided critics out of 10.
Dave?
I would have to watch it again, but off the first one, I will go with 7 out of 10 Dave Bobbleheads.
Dave Bobbleheads?
I now need a Dave Bobblehead.
Yeah. I am going to, I'm going to give this vacillating here between an 8 and an 8.5. What did you give it?
8.5.
8.5.
Misguided critics.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna give this like an 8.25 out of 10. Witches who forgot their wand at home when they decided to colonize.
Okay, so explain that joke for the audience.
For the three people that haven't watched Fantastic Beasts, the new Ridley, the new Ripley, which, by the way, that's what I'm calling her in this movie, is played by the woman that played the main witch that helps out
the detective.
Commander. Yeah, yeah.
The detective that helped out Newt Scamander in Fantastic Beasts, which was a fun movie.
It's your favorite Harry Potter movie.
It is my favorite Harry Potter movie. It's the only Harry Potter movie I've seen through to the end.
Yes, but
the other ones are bad.
Well, they are not for tech types. No.
Hi, I'm a tech type.
Yeah, there's like quite a few things that you really don't like in your fiction, and Harry Potter has a lot of them, including children not being believed, children being abused, and all of this other nonsense.
So you want me to believe that I am a hormonal, temperamental 12-year-old child with a magical wand and the ability to control fire, and I go home to visit my incredibly abusive and manipulative aunt and uncle, and I don't just immediately incinerate the whole house in a fireball. You have no idea what a teenage boy can do when he's angry.
It doesn't matter if the rules say you can't. I mean, it's just going to happen because Harry, he let a snake go without meaning to. It's obvious that these things will happen. But the great thing about Fantastic Beasts is we had all the cool magical stuff, but it was adults.
Right, and it was a fun little story, and there was the beauty of that is that the supporting cast stole the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The muggle was, what was his name?
The baker.
Good. Yeah. And, by the way, spoilers for Fantastic Beasts.
And the baker and his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was great. She I loved
amazing.
Her.
It was a fun movie. I had a good time with it. Mr. Scott, Mr. Ridley Scott, please hurry up. And you know what? Don't. Take your time.
Yes, take your time. Do it right.
Do it right. Give me the product that you want done your way. Finish the story that you've been trying to tell for this movie. The first movie came out when I was one. So I can honestly say I've been waiting for this my entire life. So it'll be worth it. I'll be there in theaters to watch it. And I hope we can get together and talk about it again. I'm waiting for this.
I'm looking forward to what he puts out. I do think he's an artist. I have my criticisms of him. You know, he makes his movies really, really white. But and his attitudes are wrong. But one thing I do really enjoy is, and especially in this movie, there's a lot of women because there's has to be. It's the ship is piloted and run by couples. Everybody has to be a couple, heteronormative couple, and there's no makeup on them. There's no running in high heels. There's no trying to sexify them or make them hot or pretty. Even in flashbacks, there's no like glitzing up.
Everybody's in really ugly flight suits.
Yeah.
They're in coveralls.
Yeah.
The entire movie, or in combats.
Yeah.
With like dorky hats and full gloves, and there's no cleavage. There's, like you said, there's no makeup.
The best looking person is a synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's Magneto.
Yeah.
But there's one sex scene.
Yep.
An interrupted sex scene.
This is what happens.
We can go back to our rule about never ever clean yourself in an alien movie, because as soon as you try to have a hot steamy shower scene.
Yeah, especially if you want to have sex in that shower. It's a bad time.
Yeah, sorry, xenomorph. Sorry, humans.
Yeah, that really turns on the xenomorph, and you don't want to see them get turned on.
Well, we see what happens. It's bad.
It's bad. Well, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fine. They're fine. Anyways.
We're all fine here. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Yeah, no, I got nothing. Yeah, sex scenes, you did. But just to quickly touch on supporting characters, I've talked to you two about it already. There's a supporting character in the Alien Covenant movie. I can't remember his last name.
The guy that plays Tennessee.
Yeah, the guy that plays Tennessee. He's the third leg for the tripod of Pineapple Express.
Yep.
So this was the first time I've seen him in an actual serious role, which was really cool because he wasn't the burnout stoner aggro guy. You definitely kind of see it a bit, but I know it was really cool.
He did really, really well. It was a fantastic character. It was played really good, and yeah, okay. He's Tennessee. He's the hick in space. He's the guy that takes it a little bit more relaxed. But you get this feeling from the very beginning. The reason he's there is because he's really good at his job, and it turns out that he is. And then we see it again and again and again that the guy gets results. And I can't remember the actor's name. I'm sorry. He did very, very well. The character of Tennessee is awesome. Well portrayed.
Yeah, he was awesome. So I do want to say that if you enjoyed this like we did and you are jonesing for something that kind of gives you a good feel like this, you like the alien stuff, but you don't want to see somebody do a bad ripoff. There is a series of books out there that you can go and get yourself by Paul E. Cooley called Derelict. And you've got that alien vibe in the sense of, oh my gosh, what is this horribleness? And learning about it and learning what it is and what it can do and trying to escape from it. But it's not, it's a whole new thing. It's not the alien and it's not a ripoff. And there's that kind of feeling in the back of your throat as you watch the alien movies, as you're reading these books. So I highly recommend that you go and you check that out. You can either listen to it on a podcast, you can buy the audiobook, or you can get the ebook or the print book. But yeah, this is my plug for Cooley just because it is related to what we're talking about.
Everybody needs to read Cooley stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, when you meet Cooley at a convention, you cannot understand how a horror writer can be that nice of a guy. And everybody tell him that I'm the one going around telling people he's a nice guy.
He's a teddy bear. And he gives great hugs. Now, yeah, there's a total disclaimer. Cooley's one of my best friends. Yeah. But that's not why I'm plugging it. I am plugging it because this is a good series. And there's some of his stuff that I really dig and some of his stuff not as much, but this is one of the ones that's like, hey, you're knocking it out of the park there.
So if you look at this franchise and you think to yourself, I want to see more movies like Alien.
Yeah.
What else is there in this genre? I have to mention one of my favorite standalone sci-fi movies of all time. Everyone needs to see Event Horizon.
All right. Yeah.
It is amazing and it is chilling and creepy and weird. And what's really cool about that one, you never, ever see the monster if there is a monster. No one knows. It's a very good movie. And if you went through this alien thing and you're like, wow, I want to play an alien type video game.
Yes.
But I don't really like the alien games because they've all been pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a trilogy that was out on PS3 and I think Xbox. They're out there somewhere. You can find them in the bargain bin for real cheap. Play the Dead Space trilogy.
Those are good.
They are amazingly horrifying games.
We've mentioned them before on the podcast.
They are really, really, really fun and they capture all of the same vibe.
And sometimes Tech has to remind himself that he's safe in his living room.
I will be in the living room singing to him, I'm just playing a video game. There are no real monsters. Oh my God, it's a monster!
Dave, do you have any plugs?
Touching on the video game thing, I do believe it's for the Xbox One, but I know it's for the PS4. There's an actual alien game that's out. And it is not like the traditional games. You never see the alien. The only time you see the alien is if you screw up and it kills you. But you are on you're on a ship. You are Ripley's daughter, I think, in the storyline. I've only played about an hour of it. I put it down and then I had to, go do something else. But yeah, there's synthetics on the ship. There's AI. Everyone's pretty much dead. If you bump into someone else, they're going to be dead or they're on their way. But yeah, it's one of those games where it's meant for you to play with a headset. Because if you're hiding and the xenomorph is nearby, if you're breathing into the microphone too hard, it will find you.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot.
And just to put it out there, for retail price off the PSN store, it's probably $30-$40, and it goes on sale almost every quarter for $20. If you want a game where you're gonna have to invest in some adult diapers, that alien, I think it's Alien Encounter. I can't remember the word after aliens, but if you just look up aliens, it's right there in the search.
That's happened to me before. I'm walking through my local game store, I'm like, I want a game that makes me need to put on diapers, because that's my thing. So, Dave, how did you enjoy podcasting for the first time?
I'm enjoying it. It's we're sitting around talking about nerd stuff, which is what I enjoy doing.
Not nearly as daunting as you thought it was. What is it?
Well, no, again, because the only exposure I've had is to listening to podcasts. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we're just talking. It's great. I love nerd. Nerd loves me, I hope.
This is the easiest part, by the way.
Yeah, this is the really easy part. It's the editing and posting and all the stuff afterwards that's kind of tricksy. But just keep tabs on Nutty. She'll show you. She'll show you the ropes. Welcome to the world, kid.
Well, yes, I looked at a free program, Audacity, I think.
Yes, that is the program you'll want.
The program to use.
I was making some noises, just recording, and I'm like, okay, what can I do? And thinking Minions. That's my testing noise. It scared me. So I'm not going 2 feet first. I'm just dipping the toe in and doing it right.
Audacity is it's intimidating to look at, but it's not intuitive, user friendly, but it is pretty simple and it is easy. And it's going to be your best friend. I use GarageBand because I have a Mac, but I still, after doing it in GarageBand, I use Audacity for a couple of their filters and then converting to MP3. I prefer that to Apple's shenanigans. I don't record in GarageBand. If I'm just recording straight me, I'm going to use Audacity. So, it's a good thing.
So, Dave, where can people find you?
Yes, that was my next question. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Instagram right now at Dave the Jedi Wookie. I have not.
Please tell me your profile picture is the one I made you.
Yes, it is. That's what inspired the Instagram username. If you guys do jump on it, you'll see something that Nutty did for me, years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It was a perk for CHSR Fun Drive.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
If you want to donate to CHSR, go to chsrfm.ca.
So it was you were going to take a picture.
Yep. And turn it into pop art.
Yeah, turn it into pop art. So I threw on my Chewbacca hoodie, which is furry like the 70s rugs, grabbed one of my lightsabers, turned it on, and did a battle cry pose. And then I sent it to Nutty and said, does this work? And the only thing she says is like, this is going to be a herd. I hate you, but I'll get back to you.
Yeah, yeah. Drawing individual hairs is always fun, but it was good. It came out fun. And I believe I put the Louis Vuitton-esque nerd pattern in the background too.
Oh yes, there's it definitely should be on a billboard.
Well, it is vector, so I can make it it is scalable. So thank you so much for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this, and this just I felt like we needed to record something simply because people didn't like this movie, and I don't know why.
No, it again, I was skeptical because of the internet.
Damn internet.
Yeah, that damn internet machine. But yeah, as we've said right from the get-go, the critics are doing what they're doing. But when it really comes down to it is when you're going to go watch a movie, and if it's in a movie, series, or genre that you're going to like, you make up your own opinion. Because at the end of the day, no one's going to, there's good people that agree with you and there's good people that disagree with you. And it sucks that the critics have that much pull when it comes to how much people go actually see the movies.
Yeah, they're awful. And you can find Tech and I at nimbleless.org. You can find Tech's ramblings about Aikido at upsidedownandflying.ca. I'm doing this for him because he keeps getting it wrong. And soon there will be a podcast at some point when he decides to edit. Remember, you said editing is the most annoying part. Yeah. So thank you so much. And you will hear the rest of the contact information on the outro. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
Oh, no, I wasn't recording. Just kidding.
This is not the podcast promo you're looking for.
Because Aurora Lee is not a podcaster. She wouldn't even record her own ad. She's a travel photographer who also enjoys a bit of geeky experimentation. Lego, Star Wars, minifig, Valentine's, anyone? Like many other creatives, she wants to share her physical art with everyone. But also, maybe not go broke doing it. Support her over on Patreon, and she'd love to send you art for you, your wall, and even your friends. Patreon.com/AuroraLee. AuroraLee.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimbleless Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimbleless.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.
Hi. I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.